Hi, Matt here. We're excited to celebrate a milestone. Think Fast, Talk Smart is approaching our 300th episode. To mark the occasion, I'll be hosting two free Ask Matt Anything events on June 3rd at 8 a.m. or 8 p.m. Pacific. We'll run these on LinkedIn and YouTube, open to everyone around the globe. Before taking your questions, I'll share one of my favorite new communication structures for advancing ideas and arguments. Anyone joining can submit questions online during the event, and a few of our learning community members will have the opportunity to ask me their questions live on video. Don't miss this opportunity to be part of this live AMA on June 3rd. Be sure to sign up on LinkedIn, YouTube, or fastersmarter.io/live. Now a word from one of our sponsors. Their support covers the cost of production, allowing us to bring you quality content free of charge. Language isn't just about words. It's about connection, opportunity, and credibility. That's one reason I like Babbel. It focuses on real-world communication, not just vocabulary drills, but practical conversations you can actually use, whether that's collaborating internationally, traveling for work, or building relationships across cultures. The lessons are short, about 10 minutes, so they fit into busy schedules, and they're designed by more than 200 language experts with tools for listening, speaking, reading, and writing. It adapts to how you learn and helps you track real progress over time. For many of our listeners, whether you're strengthening English skills, adding another language for professional growth, or staying connected globally, it's a practical way to keep moving forward. Babbel has over 25 million subscriptions sold worldwide, offers 14 languages, and every course comes with a 14-day money-back guarantee. If you've ever thought about learning another language, this is a perfect opportunity to start. Right now, Babbel is offering up to 60% off your subscription at babbel.com/TFTS. That's Babbel, Babbel.com/TFTS for up to 60% off. Rules and restrictions apply. Communicating among the different generations in the workplace can be quite challenging. Some companies have between 4 and 5 generations working side by side. My name is Matt Abrahams, and I teach strategic communication at Stanford Graduate School of Business. Welcome to Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. Today, I'm excited to speak with Bob McCann. Bob holds his primary faculty appointment at the UCLA Anderson School of Management, where he is also the director of the Leadership Communication Program, and a secondary appointment at the UCLA Henry Samueli School of Engineering and Applied Science. Bob teaches courses in leadership communication, entrepreneurship, global leadership, and persuasion. Bob is also a consultant and founded the McCann Group. Bob, I'm really excited to have our conversation today.
Thank you. It's really nice of you to invite me. Excellent. I really appreciate it.
Thanks. Shall we get started?
Let's do it.
A lot of your research and work focuses on intergenerational interactions in the workplace. Can you give us some context around this issue? Why should we care about generational interactions?
We should care because in our current landscape, we have 4, 5, maybe even 6 generations in the workplace at the same time. And so there's a tremendous opportunity for meeting and interacting with people who are different than you, for increasing a variety of potential outcomes in business in a positive way. If we can maximize our intergenerational engagement, I think that it's a particularly important topic and a topic that means a lot to me. I mean, my dad is 97 years old and still works 50 hours a week. So I think all of us as researchers, as academics, we need to study something that we care about.
That's amazing, by the way. And certainly, we're graduating students all the time who enter the workplace, and they're working with people who've been there for a longer time. What and how do you look at a generation? What is a generation? We have these names for them, but what does it mean?
It's a good question, and there's not necessarily one answer to the question. So we can look at a generation as sort of a span of 20 to 30 years. Then there's the more socially constructed generations that demographers might use that is often pinned around a specific event in time. So, for example, the Great Generation, as I mentioned, my father, that right. generation might be tied to World War II, whereas the Baby Boom Generation, a very large one, is more of a demographic based generation.
Okay, so there are lots of ways of categorizing it.
There are.
The bottom line is, yes, we have people with lots of different experiences in the workplace at the same time, and those groups or generations tend to have certain characteristics that stand out.
That's right. And I think sometimes we exaggerate or overemphasize the similarities and or differences in a generation. But on the other hand, it's a handy tool. It's a handy tool as well.
Yeah. So this academic year is the first year that all of our students are primarily Gen Z. We use these names to help categorize based on a timestamp. In your work, what are things that leaders and companies can do to help around these generational issues?
So if we start at an organizational level, it would well serve most companies in some sense, regardless of whether they're small, medium, or large, to have age diversity as a part of their DEI efforts. So we often talk about gender diversity, and we talk about ethnic diversity and sexual orientation and ability and disability and cognition and so on and so forth. That's wonderful, as we should. However, ageism and age diversity sometimes gets forgotten. There are little things organizations can do. They can scan their own website to see if let's just imagine an older worker was looking at the Stanford Business School website. Scan for images. Maybe it would look like a more welcoming place for an older individual if they saw different images on the website. Certainly would want to have anti-bias training. If you move to the next level, it could be job ads, for example. We can look what kind of language do we use in our job ads. So if we have ads such as, I'm looking for a vibrant worker and a fresh face to work in a fast-paced environment, we have to be careful for ageist code words. So I think that at an organizational level, intergenerational mentoring, where we have reverse age mentoring, is something we see a lot now in the research. Intergenerational team formation is something else we see. These are all sort of at the corporate and leadership level. And then ultimately, I think a lot of the research is quite useful. If we go back 20 years ago, it was that the problem of the stereotypes and so on was well researched, but the solutions were not. And now we're starting to see a lot of the solutions.
Absolutely. And underlying everything you shared is this notion that diversity in all types is beneficial to organizations, not just gender or cultural diversity, but also age diversity is really beneficial. And anything you can do to foster that. How do the different groups communicate differently in the workplace? Can you help us tease out some of the fact from the stereotypes?
Generally speaking, the stereotypes about older people tend to be negative, communicatively challenged, frail, slow. Then we have workplace stereotypes. Older workers are struggling with technology, or older workers as being less productive. These are stereotypes now. Older workers as being slower on the job. Older workers as being more loyal, older workers as being more trustworthy. So there are a variety of positive and negative stereotypes that we can see in the organizations. There is the stereotype literature, which is robust, and then there's the communication literature, which looks at what are some of the communication patterns that we see in organizations and outside of organizations that may, in some sense, play along with these stereotypes. So, for example, you may be over-accommodative, you may be under-accommodative, you may dismiss someone communicatively because you view them as an out-group as opposed to an age in-group. So a lot of the communication can track along in that way, too. Then, of course, there's age discrimination. And that is what I studied years ago. I started looking at age discrimination cases, and we started to bucket out different types of language that we found utilized in age discrimination cases and attract very handily with these stereotypes. You could literally bucket them into the out-to-pasture stereotype. So it's really fascinating how communication and stereotypes, everything here, go together.
Absolutely. And just as you identified some of the stereotypes that younger workers have of older workers absolutely have stereotypes,
yes,
of younger workers as not focused or not caring to the same degree. It sounds to me like part of what we have to do is be aware that this stereotyping happens. And then it sounds like there are things we can do through communication to help, one, bust those stereotypes, but also help facilitate interaction. And I'd like to drill down a bit more there. Are there things that you know from the literature or your work that can help bring better interaction among the generations?
The key would be quality contact over quantity of contact. So as an example, we now see many companies moving into shadow boards. So we have a board of directors, which may be senior, older person heavy, and younger people are brought into the boards to shadow the older board of directors people. So that is an example of bringing a young person into a group that they may be excluded, and the quality of contact there can be quite strong. Another one would be age mentoring. So a younger worker might mentor, and this is done in quite a few companies now. I'm seeing it in the pharmaceutical industry, where a younger person might mentor an older worker on technology, and an older worker may share wisdom with a younger person on something else. Cross-training is another. So there are many organizational initiatives that stress quality of contact. So just getting together at the pub or the bar for a party may not be quality contact.
I like these examples because they're things that you can build into organizations, inviting younger people to boards where maybe older people are sitting on it, forming teams in a way that's very diverse in terms of age and other perspectives. And it seems to me that the actual quality of the interaction is also important. So if I'm facilitating a meeting, perhaps I make sure that I'm hearing from lots of different people. It might be that the older person talks more, or the younger person talks less, or the language and vocabulary are different. And I, as a facilitator of those interactions, need to be very careful to make sure that everybody is literally speaking the same language and has the opportunity in terms of talk time as well. The operationalization of the communication, not just the ways in which we're organizing, also are important.
That's correct. And I think, is it Amazon where a lot of the younger employees are actually in different meetings or asked to speak first in the
right meeting?
The more junior tends to be related
to age.
But. So it's the same idea in some sense. And I think these type of initiatives are really useful, and they don't really cost much money
in many cases. Right. And the research that I'm familiar with shows that meetings, for example, are more productive and people feel better about their contributions and how the whole group is working. You mentioned technology as an example of some of the mentoring that can happen. I'm curious, based on what you know about this, how technology plays in this. How does technology play both as something that can help in these circumstances and perhaps actually drive even bigger wedges in between the generations?
Let's just talk. I think the interaction between technology and training is can we go down that road? So there is research, some of it rather unfortunate, that older workers are often denied training. We also know from some research that when a trainer knows that an individual is an older worker, they will provide less quality training and shorter training to the older individual. There's some interesting studies done on that. Number one, if we could work to bust some of those stereotypes in and of itself, that would be helpful. However, older workers do train differently. But from the research, it would suggest there is a preference towards live training. There's a preference towards storytelling and training. There's a preference towards self-paced training. There's a preference towards an interactive engagement in training. So I don't think it's necessarily the technology that the older workers can't necessarily handle, but they need to be trained in many cases in a way that is differently. So all we need to do on a given weekday afternoon, go to an Apple store. The periphery of the store are all younger people, but in the middle of the store, it's all older individuals training. I think that's a perfect illustration of some of the differences.
I really appreciate what you did in your answer, which was to take a question that's based on a stereotype about technology and turn it into what I think is really more important, which is understanding how people interact with and learn, not just technology, but I think more broadly, to capture and truly benefit from diversity of any type. We really have to reflect on how people like to learn, like to engage, and we have to adjust. As somebody prior to my academic career who ran learning and development, it was very clear that you have to be very cognizant about how people best receive new information and training. This has been a fascinating conversation and one that I think opens up my mind, and I hope everybody listening in, to this notion that we need to be very cognizant of how we communicate when interacting with people older than us or younger than us. And there are things we can do institutionally within an organization, but also in our own practices to better serve those needs.
We'll be right back to finish our conversation. But first, a quick word from one of our sponsors. Their support allows us to bring you this show free of charge. When things get busy, and they always do. The real challenge is focus, knowing where to spend your time so you actually make meaningful progress. But that's hard when you're trying to do everything yourself. That's where Upwork can help. Upwork is a one-stop platform to find, hire, and pay expert freelancers across areas like marketing, development, data and analytics, and more. It gives you fast access to specialized talent so you can move quickly, fill key gaps, and keep your work moving forward without getting stuck. You can browse profiles, review past work, and get help scoping your project so you can hire with confidence and get started faster. And if speed really matters, you can connect with top-tier talent and get matched in under 6 hours. It's a simple way to maintain momentum and focus on what matters most. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. If you think about it, a lot of our communication challenges at work aren't about what we say. They're about what never gets clearly shared in the first place, especially as teams grow and change. Processes live in people's heads. Explanations vary, and over time, that leads to confusion and inconsistency. This is exactly the problem today's sponsor, Scribe, was built to solve. Trusted by over 80,000 enterprises, including nearly half of the Fortune 500, Scribe is a workflow AI platform that captures what you're doing in real time and automatically turns it into clear, step-by-step guides. No recording, no manual write-ups. So instead of adding one more task to your to-do list, you can just do your work knowing it's being documented for others. As our team has grown, we've spent a lot of time walking people through onboarding, tool transitions, and cross-team workflows. And the reality is, we're often just too busy to stop and properly document all of it. With Scribe, you just turn on the extension, go through the process, and it builds the guide as you go. Something that might take hours or get pushed aside entirely now takes seconds. It also automatically redacts sensitive information so you can share confidently across teams, contractors, and new hires. And anyone following along gets real-time on-screen guidance. So the message isn't just sent, it's actually understood and applied. And what I really appreciate is that Scribe doesn't just document your processes, it helps you improve them by showing you where things could be more consistent, more efficient, and easier to hand off. To book a personalized enterprise demo, visit scribe.how/thinkfast. That's scribe.how/thinkfast. And now, back to our conversation.
I end every one of these episodes with three questions. One I make special just for you, and then two that everybody else answers. Are you up for answering these?
Go for it.
So one of the areas that you study is persuasion. If you were to go into an organization and try to persuade them to implement one thing that you think would make a big difference in how folks of different generations communicate, what would you advocate for?
Who am I persuading? I always need to know who the audience is. Am I persuading the senior leadership?
Yeah, your leadership.
I would persuade them to implement initiatives to have all employees in the organization, regardless of how small or how large it is, to diversify their networks. Your LinkedIn network, it could be the people on your phone, it could be all the people that you feel that are in your network. Scan for diversity. Scan for age. Scan for culture. Scan for gender. Find opportunities around common interests that you can meet and engage with people that are different than you, because if they can create opportunities for the organization, the people in the company, to deeply engage with people that are not like themselves, I think that could probably have as big an impact as anything you would see in an organization. So I'm trying to go maybe deeper than you thought.
No, I think that's absolutely wonderful and important. And I like how you rooted it in everybody, look at what you are doing. Look at your phone. Look at your LinkedIn network. Notice that. And as a leader, what can you do to expand those networks for the people? I think that's fantastic advice. Question number two, who's a communicator that you admire and why?
Indra Nooyi.
Tell me more.
In business school, we always hear rock star. This person's a rock star and that person's a rock star. I think it's overused, quite frankly, not with Indra Nooyi. The language that Indra Nooyi uses is vivid. The storytelling is audience-centric and engaging. You feel like Indra's stories are our stories. The way I've seen Indra work audiences and react and be in tune with them and engaged is fascinating. I think Indra Nooyi is one of the most authentic speakers I've ever seen. Just listen to the word choice, her body language, her ease, her articulation.
She certainly is a good communicator. And as the former CEO of PepsiCo, somebody who is very important in my life since I enjoy so many of those products regularly. So she is the chief executive of the PepsiCo company. And that's a very good speaker and a very good choice. Final question. What are the first three ingredients that go into a successful communication recipe?
So I was raised just outside of Boston. So we think in terms of sports. So Bill Belichick, the New England Patriots, over and over and over talked about the three phases of the game. Offense, defense, special teams. So there's our NFL football analogy. I feel that we need to be prepared for our offense. So I really am a systems person here. It's probably because I teach at the School of Engineering, starting with the offense, your metrics, your data, your statistics, your stories, your internal evidence, your external evidence. I work with the students to make sure their offense is strong, and they're generally pretty good. I think they undersell the stories. They undersell the soft evidence. They probably overdo the quantitative evidence, but the defense, I think, is less. By defense, I mean being ready for friction, being ready for objections. I'm sure you know the book, The Human Element. I think students underprepare for that. If you can be ready for those objections, in many cases, the defense can become the offense. And then the final is the sort of special sauce, the special team for the NFL analogy, is that we then look deeply at the audience and we look at our micro level and our macro level persuasion. We look at different persuasive techniques. So really, for me, it's those three things. If someone always understands the audience, they're in tune, they're ready for Q&A, and they can prepare for those three areas, I think they're going to be in good shape.
I like the analogy in that it signals that we shouldn't focus just on all the reasons why for something. We also have to think about when our message meets the people and the resistance, hesitation, concern, and we need to be prepared for that. And I agree, many people are underprepared. And then we need to look at the tools that we have, the special tools that can help us, leveraging some of the influence tactics that you mentioned. And absolutely, I agree that everything is predicated on understanding the audience and appreciating where they're at. Bob, this has been a fascinating conversation. I appreciate you giving us insight into yet another area of diversity that we need to be thinking about in our communication and organizations, particularly around age and generations. Lots of very practical and tactical bits of advice. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. To learn more about diversity in the workplace, please listen to episode 67 with Michelle Gelfin and episode 21 with Sarah Sewell. This episode was produced by Jenny Luna, Michael Riley, and me, Matt Abrahams. Our music is from Floyd Wonder. Please find us on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to subscribe and rate us. Also, follow us on LinkedIn and Instagram. And check out fastersmarter.io for deep dive videos, English language learning content, and our newsletter.
Before we wrap up, I just want to say thank you for listening. It really means a lot to hear how people all over the world are using these ideas in their own lives. It inspires me and the whole team that brings you this show. If you want more episodes and resources, feel free to follow, subscribe, and explore past conversations. We're grateful for your support of Think Fast, Talk Smart.